Hello and welcome to Popcorn Mumbles, the podcast where we dig into the back catalog to select a film or television show to rewatch. I'm your host, Cody Nestor, and alongside me, as always, my co-host, Todd Heal.
What's up, guys?
Just a reminder, the video version of today's episode is available on YouTube. If you enjoy the show, please consider following us on your podcast platform of choice and subscribing to our YouTube channel. This week, we've chosen the 2014 film Godzilla. Ford Brody, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, a Navy bomb expert, has just reunited with his family in San Francisco when he is forced to go to Japan to help his estranged father, Joe, played by Bryan Cranston. Soon, both men are swept up in an escalating crisis when Godzilla, King of the Monsters, arises from the sea to combat malevolent adversaries that threaten the survival of humanity. The creatures leave colossal destruction in their wake as they make their way toward their final battleground, San Francisco. Godzilla was released on May 16, 2014. On a budget of $160 million, it made $524 million. It has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 76% and an audience score of 66%. So, Todd, let's discuss Godzilla. Spoilers are ahead.
Okay.
So, Todd, I'm going to throw it to you first. Where do you want to start off with Godzilla 2014?
I did a little digging. Okay. It's 16 years between Zilla 98 and this movie. That time, Toho released six of their own Godzilla movies.
Right.
This 2014 film, as you said, was pretty successful box office wise, which kind of led them into creating their own MonsterVerse, because by now, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kicking ass and taking names, so everybody's got to have a verse of some kind.
Yeah, exactly. MonsterVerse for this. The Dark Pictures Universe, remember that? Oh, no, because there's only one movie.
That was The Mummy,
The
right?
Mummy, yeah, exactly.
It crashed and burned after the first.
Exactly. So what's your history with this film, Todd? We saw it together, I know.
We saw it together, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I had a plus one with me that night, if you remember.
No, I don't.
Yeah, she was with us.
I mean, he? No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. We're stopping recording right now. Some ass justice to be dealt out. And now he's going to say ass justice. Just like you
there
like.
There was some ass justice dealt out that night, too, I think. Sorry. It's easy jokes, folks. I'm sorry.
Make fun of the old man.
Yeah. It's just like a softball. I couldn't help it. I remember this being better.
Is it just me?
I remember this being better than when I rewatched it. I was underwhelmed a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I watched this way before we watched Minus One. So
right.
It wasn't like Minus One had ruined this for me.
No, I'd watched it before we went to see Minus One, yeah.
Yeah, still, it was just, I remember it being a little bit better than maybe I actually was.
Yeah, I mean, we watched Zilla 98. We both have no affection for that film. We both think it's a pretty terrible film.
Right.
This is not a terrible film.
No.
At all. It's not terrible. At all. It's just, I don't know. I think the big problem with this one is it's the human characters to a point. We've talked about that in other Godzilla, you know, material that we've done now. But let's back up a little bit. So, you know, kind of to set the picture, Bryan Cranston, he runs a power plant. He runs a nuclear power plant, a nuclear reactor.
Right.
In Janjira. Janjira.
I think you're correct.
In Janjira. You don't have no idea.
I don't. You're correct.
In Janjira, Japan. And so him, his wife, his son, they're all living there. And they've been detecting kind of some like abnormal seismic activity, let's call it,
right,
around the power plant. He's getting more and more paranoid. He's asking, you know, some of the higher-ups there, like, you know, we may have to shut this thing down. Some shit's going wrong. His wife also works there. He ends up at the very beginning of the film asking her going down to level 5.
Take a team down there,
check
it out. Yeah,
take a team, see what's going on. Of course, as soon as she steps foot down there,
all hell breaks loose.
The whole reactor, you know, there's something that's around the reactor that's causing all this, as we'll come to learn. But the whole reactor basically has a meltdown. They try to shut it down, and then he does manage to get away. You know, they do manage to get away. But that's kind of our backdrop for everything that happens is the kind of the drama with him. And then we kind of cut to Aaron Taylor Johnson. He's military man. That's his whole character.
He's military.
I'm in the military.
That's his whole.
He's actually in EOD, which is
ordnance disposal.
Yeah, explosive ordnance disposal. That'll be key
Yes.
That'll be key.
That'll come in handy later.
Elizabeth Olsen is also in the picture as nurse wife.
Yep.
Underutilized nurse wife.
Very underutilized.
I don't know why she's in this film.
I know, right?
I think she just saw a Godzilla, big budget Godzilla film. That could be good for my career. Probably could have if you were in the film.
Yeah.
maybe has two scenes, three scenes.
She's not in a hell of a lot of it.
Her biggest scene is pawning off her kid to anybody that'll take him.
get him out of here.
At one point, it's basically like her big scene there. She's just kind of around to be like, Ford, when you're coming home, I'm so scared. I'm so scared right now. Like, that's her whole thing.
Right?
Like, she works at the hospital. She's a nurse. Do we see her saving lives and, like, take him over there and I need an IV drip and all this.
She's not really barking out any nurse orders like
no,
that.
No, she's just, like, just there to be, like, his kind of, you know, she's nurse wife. And she's just there to give a little bit of exposition and to be scared. And that's about it. So she's kind of underutilized. Like, it's like a certain cutoff where this goes from, like, interesting human drama to I could give a fuck.
It almost hijacks the entire movie.
I don't give a fuck anymore comes in as soon as Bryan Cranston gets crushed under that bridge. Because he's the only interesting character in the film.
Right.
He has motivation. He can't let go of what happened at the power plant. He knows there's more to the story.
He's driven.
He's
focused.
Driven to it. He lost his wife. He's kind of become estranged from his son because he can't let it go. He knows that it wasn't as it seemed. He knows something's going on there.
Stayed in echolocation.
Yeah, he thinks something's talking, mm-hmm. You know, the same way it was talking 15 years prior.
Right.
And he has motivation. As soon as he's out of the film, I don't care.
It's like, pretty much just a military operation after that.
Exactly.
There's no heart. There's no soul.
There's no, like, again, we've recently seen a Godzilla film with a lot of heart and a lot of soul.
Exactly.
And this has none of it. I don't care about ATJ. I don't care about his military stuff. I don't care about anything that they're doing. None of it is interesting. Elizabeth Olsen's not really used at all. She doesn't really have a character or any kind of growth or anything. He doesn't have a character or any kind of growth. He's just there to be EOD guy right. To defuse a bomb later in the film.
Right.
Bryan Cranston's character, Joe, was the only one that had real motivation and had any kind of real interest in the story.
Yeah.
As soon as that bridge collapses, that's gone.
It's
gone.
You lost it.
Give us our setup for Ken Watanabe, Todd. So Dr. Shirazawa. Tell us, there's a scene at a dig site, basically. Tell us what happens
there.
Yeah,
they fly out there in a Monarch chopper, him and his assistant. I don't remember her name.
I have it here somewhere, I'm sure. Vivian.
Right.
Sally Hawkins.
And they've kind of got called out there to a dig site, as you say. They've kind of unearthed something. There's a claw almost type protruding thing.
You're talking about the eggs or
the
spore?
Yeah, egg looking thing.
Yeah, so like
sort
they
of
find
claw
like
looking.
They find like a, it's like a giant fossil, like probably the size of Godzilla.
Right.
It's not Godzilla, but it was around, it's been around probably as long as Godzilla. And they see those two kind of fossilized eggs. Yeah, they're kind of like protrusions. Yeah, they right. have like a kind of a point to them.
Yeah.
And one of them is kind of
ruptured.
Yeah, one of them is hatched.
Yeah.
And the other one is still kind of intact there pretty much. So the next thing we kind of see, Aaron Taylor Johnson, they get a call. He's returned home. He gets a call on his return night that Joe, Bryan Cranston, got arrested because he tried to go back to the power plant and got arrested. So he hops on a flight to Japan to go bail him out of jail. Again, Moore's kind of set up for that character about he kind of explains what's going on. Again, like we talked about, he hears something talking. The seismic activity that he's seeing now is kind of reminiscent.
Again, like what happened to his family years ago.
Exactly. And that kind of all sets up and kind of culminates with them going back into Jinjira. He discovers that it's not nuclear fallout. It's not a, you know.
They can take their masks off.
Yeah, they can breathe the air. Like, there's nothing going on there. Like, someone is covering this up, which is, I guess, Monarch more than the government. And then they get arrested by, not the government, but by Monarch.
Monarch.
And Monarch takes them back to their little facility they have set up at the, I guess it's the remnants of the power plant, is it?
I believe it was.
Because they're just doing their shit out in the open. They're like, nobody with a plane or chopper. Hey, y'all see this big-ass fossilized egg over here? That's just out. In the open air?
Maybe it's a no-fly zone.
I guess. I'm sure they're Monarch. I'm sure they've got the whole area locked down or something. But, I mean, they're just doing their stuff right there in the open. They're studying it. And, obviously, it's waking up. So it's doing its thing. It's waking up. All hell goes, you know, all hell breaks loose. Bryan Cranston, as we say, he's up on a bridge.
He gets killed.
Crushed. And then there goes most of your movie. There goes your motivation and stuff. And then from there, it's just – your focus goes to Ford, which is Aaron Taylor Johnson, and it's like you said, it pretty much becomes a military operation. The plan is to well, I guess we should, before we go into the plan, let's talk about what hatches out of the egg.
Is a MUTO.
A MUTO. I can't remember what the acronym actually stands for.
I actually wrote it down.
Oh, what do you got?
Look at me. Massive Unidentified Terrestrial Organism.
Oh, okay. MUTO. So the first one that hatches, we come to find out, is the male. Mm-hmm. The smaller male with wings. And then we eventually find out that there is that other egg that they took, where they took it to some mountain somewhere outside of Vegas.
Where they supposedly take all their nuclear waste.
Exactly. And that one hatches, which is a larger wingless female, but much larger than our male MUTO. Right.
And what are they wanting to do? A male, a female.
They want to freak. Is that what you want to ask me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much the motivation as we see later. There's a couple of scenes too. I don't know. It just bugged me. So like,
and I thought the one where that one breaks out of that nuclear waste facility, that's the one that winds up traipsing through Vegas, right?
Yes.
What a blown, wasted opportunity to show a little bit of Vegas destruction. Just barely gloss over
it. You see it on the video monitors. That's a gag that's used a couple times. You see fights and see things on like video monitors and TV screens. You see it tear down that the Eiffel Tower in Vegas, you know, that's there. Yeah, another wasted opportunity. But that one breaks out of the back of that. The mountain.
Right.
Before, when they're looking for, there's a scene, actually it's not before, it's later, there's a scene where they're looking for a submarine that has that, I think it has the nuke on it or something, but it was thrown in Hawaii. They go to Hawaii later. But for my point here that I'm trying to make, that sub gets thrown up onto land in Hawaii, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got like three helicopters buzzing around, and they got a ground team, and they're like, oh, this thing is like 30 meters ahead of you. And there's like helicopters above ground. And they get there and you think it's like something small. It's a whole fucking submarine. You telling me none of them three helicopters or anybody could have seen that for more than 30 meters back?
Right.
And that's also my problem with that one, because they send that whole team. It's like a special ops team, and they're racing through that nuclear waste facility in Vegas. And I'm like, okay, where is it?
Where is it?
And there's helicopters flying around outside. Nobody saw the big fucking thing on the back of the mountain. Is that what you're telling me? The helicopter that's flying around that comes into that shot didn't see it from out
the
back?
They didn't see the whole back half of that facility gone.
Exactly. Like, it's just little stuff like that. It's nitpicks, I know, but it's like little stuff like that. And I'm like, no one saw this big-ass sub in the middle of this Hawaiian jungle, and no one saw this big-ass MUTO bust out the back of this mountain and head toward Vegas either, when there's all this military activity around it.
Crazy.
It's crazy. But basically, we go from Aaron Taylor Johnson. He is, I think at this point, he's in Hawaii, right?
I believe you're right, yeah.
Is where we're pretty much going from that point, is that he's going to Hawaii. He's trying to get back home to San Francisco. So he goes from Japan to Hawaii so he can connect back on a flight to San Francisco. He ends up on a tram outside the airport, Hawaii International Airport. And that's also where Godzilla first shows himself. Mm-hmm. We learn from a little exposition scene on the boat on the way to Hawaii from Dr. Shirazawa, kind of Godzilla's origin a little bit. They tried to bomb the shit out of him in the 50s with all the nuclear tests. He was around before that. They weren't testing bombs. They were trying to kill Godzilla, apparently. That's kind of like helped him grow. And he is, as Shirazawa kind of says it, he's a godlike creature. He is the balance of nature. He's there to set things and keep things within balance. So MUTO's running around. Godzilla can't have that.
He's got to get the balance back in order.
There's no balance if there's MUTO's frigging all over the city.
You can't have MUTO's frigging out of
Godzilla can't abide that. Mm-mm. MUTO frigging, no.
No.
So Godzilla's got to set that back in line.
No MUTO frigging on my watch.
Exactly. So... Aaron Taylor Johnson ends up on a tram headed to the airport in Hawaii. Godzilla emerges from the ocean, causing a tidal wave that had to kill thousands,
thousands of people.
At least, which we'll come back to that point later on. So that causes a tidal wave, has to kill a bunch of people. And then we go into another problem with this film. So we see the Muto and Godzilla kind of squaring off the airport. We get our first view of Godzilla. Do we see Godzilla and the Muto fight, though, Todd?
No,
we cut to it on the TV.
The TV, of course.
That's what shows us our fights.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's building anticipation. People say it's clever. I don't know that it's clever.
It's not very clever.
Yeah. In a movie that, if your human drama was better, I don't want to keep referencing other Godzilla films, but if your human drama was better, maybe it would be different or I'd feel differently. But I don't care about anything else that's going on. I don't care about Aaron Taylor Johnson having to look after some Asian boy for a scene.
Right.
He literally, because the story needs him to do something, mm-hmm. he has to like be the savior of this little Asian boy and gives him his G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And then he finds his parents in the next scene. There was no point to that, really. He could have been on that train. It got attacked. No need for the little Asian boy.
Yeah, I mean, I understand you can't have your major, you know, fight scene right then.
Right.
They could have been a skirmish.
They could have been something. Yeah. There could have been something that was shown. But again, like I said, at the time, and I think, you know, people have defended it as being clever and like a little bit of subversion, but it's just very cock-teasy. It still feels that way. It felt like it to me in 2014. I remember that being a problem that I had in it. And it still feels like that a little bit today. Like, he could have done something a little bit more. And I think I feel like that more so because I don't have anything else interesting to watch when Godzilla's not on screen.
Right,
Compared to other Godzilla films we've recently seen, I have other interesting things in human drama that I was invested in. I had nothing else interesting to watch when Godzilla was not around. So you, like, tease me by showing him on television monitors and computer screens and things like that. Like, it just doesn't work for me altogether.
Exactly.
What else? Where are we going to go? What are you going to talk about next, Todd?
There was a couple things. Well, actually, I did a little timey thing.
Okay.
I think the movie clocked in at around 2:03, 2:02, 2:03.
Yeah.
Godzilla's first appearance was about an hour in.
This is Hawaii, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He made landfall in San Francisco at about 1:30 in. Then I just put tease. Final confrontation, maybe, really begins in full at almost 1 hour and 45 to 1 hour and 50 minutes in. In a movie that's only 2 hours and 3 minutes long.
Yeah, I think, I could be wrong. I think Godzilla is in the film for 11 minutes.
Yeah.
I think, if I'm not mistaken. So let's talk about designs. Let's start with Mutos. Could we see them first? What do you think about the designs of the Mutos?
They look kind of, I don't know, just like big overgrown bugs.
Yeah, I got some like behind the scenes stuff. There's a lot of inspiration. One of those being Starship Troopers.
Oh, okay.
You can definitely see their design. They're serviceable. They're not.
They feel the role.
Yeah.
That's all I'll give them.
I think they were scared to use someone major like a Ghidorah or somebody. I think they didn't want to do that. I think they just wanted to have something generic for Godzilla to bat around a little bit. And in that case, they're serviceable. What about Godzilla's design?
Ooh, Godzilla thick. He's tall and thick.
He is tall and thick, which, again, I don't mind. Let me cut
coming
you off
of 98 though, I really was at the time like, hey, this is at least close to what he should be. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. He's got a very again, I got some more kind of inspiration in a little bit like about his design, but he's got a very animalistic face. He's got that more of that drawn out snout.
Right.
There's like, I think they said there's some bear designs and things like that. He is very bear like.
Yeah.
He's kind of like big and brawlish or whatever. It works. I don't mind the design
at all.
I think for the time, and I think it still stands up. Is it my number one Godzilla design? No. But it's probably up in the top.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
But yeah, for this, like I think the design works. We talked about how big Zilla was last week. Zilla, 98 Godzilla, was 229 feet tall. This Godzilla is 354 feet tall.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's the biggest Godzilla. I should have looked that up, but he's got to be up there.
He's got to be close.
The Empire State Building, for reference, is 1,250 feet tall, and the Statue of Liberty is 305 feet tall. That was a criticism we had of Zilla not being as tall as the Empire State Building. This Godzilla is almost 50 feet bigger than the Empire State Building.
Take that, Zilla.
Or the Statue of Liberty, I should say. Yeah, so I think size-wise, I think scale, I think everything works here. Compared to Zilla 98, there was a lot of scale issues, mm-hmm. a lot of changing. I think everything's very consistent. Gareth Edwards is, you know, the director of this film. He does a great job with scale. He was coming off the back of a movie called Monsters, which was very much a human drama set with a backdrop of, like, big kaiju action. Right. And there was a lot of good scale and use of scale there. And it's carried over into this film, and we see it too. He does a great job with that in, like, the something we saw recently, The Crater. He does a very good job. Visually, great-looking film. Mm-hmm. No problem visually at all with anything. The effects are good. The effects are good. There's no real cringy stuff. There are other better effect Godzilla films that currently live now.
Yes, that's
not,
current.
Not very current. Yeah, exactly. Wink, wink. Go see it. But, you know, it's definitely solid. The effects are definitely solid here. So there's not – cinematography's great. I know there was a lot of talk about when this movie came out on home video. I didn't research as much, but I do remember it. People were complaining about it being too dark in places. Apparently there was some kind of issue with the transfer of the film at one point where – and they just never went back and fixed it like they could have, but they didn't. So there was always a little bit of controversy. When I rewatched it, I rewatched a digital copy through iTunes. Mm-hmm. Didn't see any problems with that. What about you?
I also watched a digital copy through Vudu, and I didn't really notice anything overly dark.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think everything looked fine. I just remember, like, a lot of, like, kind of controversy about it as when it come out maybe originally, and then definitely when it was on home video. Let's see. So basically, let's put our plan in here. So the American military decides that the only thing they can do in times like these is what it always decides it can do.
Nuke.
Drop a nuke on the problem. Got to drop a nuke. So they first try to transport a nuke by train. The Mutos destroy that train. And then we learn, that's where we first see that the female Muto is pregnant, as we alluded to before. They secure that nuke once again, and then the plan that they have is to lure all three kaijus to a convergence point 20 miles offshore of San Francisco, try to kill all of them. One of the soldiers says, three birds, one stone, right? So that's the plan. The day of that, we see a really, really good scene. I actually like on the bridge.
Yes, that
was very good bridge scene in San Francisco. I actually really like that. It's kind of set in the rain. Godzilla kind of going under the boats and kind of displacing them and coming out the other side really good. Everything about that scene works for me except the bus driver thing.
Right.
It's like one of those, like, the bus driver is like, I'm out of here. Fuck this. I'm 2 days from retirement. Like, that kind of thing. Like, he just takes off. Yeah. Did you notice? I think I have it in my notes later. So I mentioned before, Elizabeth Olsen, she just passes her kid off to some lady that works at the hospital take him to a shelter. She's on, that's the same bus. But when you see inside that bus, there's clearly no other adults on that bus. It's just them children. Ah. Did that lady abandon that kid?
Did she abandon him too?
I think so.
Wow.
It's in my notes
that
later.
Poor kid.
Yeah, but that kid pretty much got abandoned by not only his mother, but the person that was supposed to be watching out for him, because there's no other adults on that bus. You can clearly see. So the male Muto, he attacks the boat and steals the nuke back. He goes and takes it and presents it to the female. Like, did I do good?
Look what I got for you.
And, of course, like most women, she was unimpressed. So she burrows underground, basically to, I guess, hatch her eggs or whatever. We learn that military man Aaron Taylor Johnson, Brody, he's the only EOD tech to survive the train attack.
Huh.
How convenient.
How about that?
How convenient. The American military has no other EOD
techs. They only got one EOD guy with a nukes around, mind you.
And conveniently, he was the one that armed or did something else to the nuke before. So he's familiar with said nuke.
Ah.
He's familiar with said nuke. I read something, too, about this film. The American military, the Army branch of the military, was unhappy with Godzilla 1998 and their depiction in it. So the American Army refused to kind of do business with this one because of that. So that's where the Navy stepped in.
Okay.
So this is Navy not Army.
Okay.
So, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Man, that's...
If I was involved with Godzilla 98, I wouldn't want anything else to do with anything either. We get a scene between the Navy Admiral, Captain, whatever he is. We get a scene with him and Ken Watanabe, or let them fight scene,
yeah.
Which is what this movie should have just been, is a lot of just letting them,
just
fight.
Let them fight.
But you didn't let them fight for most of the movie. You get let them fight for like 10 minutes later on. Halo jump scene. What'd you think of it?
I actually had a little note here that I felt like the train sequence and that jump sequence could have been scrapped completely.
Right.
I felt like that train sequence, and when I say train sequence, I mean where that train gets attacked.
You mean the Hawaii one, or you mean the nuke one where the Mutos steal the nuke? Or
well, the Muto steals the nuke, yeah, that one. Not the Hawaii one with the little kid, but the one where the Muto steals the nuke. I feel like that could have been something the guy told the general off of a computer screen.
Yeah.
General, we just lost that nuke to a Muto. We lost the train nuke, whatever. That could have gave you more monster action.
Yeah.
I mean, that jump sequence was cool, getting to see them kind of fall past the monsters as they're fighting. Could have done without it.
Yeah, or if you don't cut that train scene, maybe have that as like another where Godzilla and the Muto are actually fighting.
Have them fight there.
And and that's what causes the train to derail or something like that. That gives you another little Godzilla action scene. Yeah, I agree. It's pretty useless. Yeah. You could have that kind of... You could have some expository dialogue and do that. The Halo jump scene, I agree with you. I like it. It's just because it's visually
different.
Appealing. Yeah, it's visually appealing. It looks great. I think they use the soundtrack for that scene is fantastic. I think it's because it's music from 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Oh yeah,
I'm pretty sure, which is what adds to it. It's a good little scene, but is it needed? No, not really. Like, I think, but visually, pretty good. Pretty good.
And what did you think about the scene where, Elizabeth Olsen, she's going underground with the rest of those survivors?
Another tease.
Here comes the fight. It's happening now, Cody.
Yeah.
The fight's going to happen, right? No.
No.
Shutting the door.
Yeah, the door shut. Yeah, another, it's a lot of that. And some people argue it's building anticipation. It's the Godzilla version of edging, Todd, is what this is.
Whatever.
Like, it's what it is. And I mean, I get some people may like it. And I'm not saying I get it stylistically. But again, the problem is I don't have anything else interesting to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem.
Something interesting happening to keep us from the fight. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
At
if I was
point,
invested
you're making
in,
me mad.
Yeah, if I was if I was invested in what Elizabeth Olsen was doing in that shelter, or Aaron Taylor Johnson, you know, disarming a nuke, if I was interested in any of that, or I cared about those characters or what happened to them, it would be a different story. But I don't. So again, we talked about the female Muto, she kind of burrowed in to hatch her eggs or those spores. Quicksilver, he can't have that. So he sets them on fire. That helps break up the double team the Mutos have going on Godzilla long enough for him to fire off his atomic breath. So that's something we should talk about. I really do like the depiction of the atomic breath here, the kind of rev-up sound that it has. That's really good. The visually, it looks good.
Looked amazing.
Yeah, the first time he fires it off, it's really good. It's pretty effective. Again, not as good as some of the atomic breath we've seen in recent Godzilla films.
Ting.
but still pretty good depiction. So the military have possession of the nuke again. They go to load it on another boat. Godzilla kills the male Muto with a really perfectly timed tail whip into the building.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching that and I'm like, that didn't kill him. I was like, I don't remember him dying this way. I think he's probably going to come back, right? Nah, he did.
He did.
I just really thought, I was like, something in me, I was like, I remember this thing coming back again. But no, it's not. He gets slapped in that building pretty hard and he's done. And then the skyscraper ends up falling on Godzilla, and then him and ATJ happens to be fall on the street right where ATJ is, and they have a little like, we still got work to do, big guy. Look, like stare down in the middle of the, we still got work to do.
Me and you.
They've already frigged. We got you let me down on the frigging, Godzilla. Now we gotta put this right, okay? So Miss Muto, she kills the soldiers near the boat that are loading the nuke on there. Quicksilver, he manages to crank it up, send it out to sea. he saved from Miss Muto at the last second by Godzilla in the coolest part of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and still, if you look at that last fight, it's still so broken up. Mm-hmm. We were talking about
it's
in other
very choppy.
Yes, we were talking about other Godzilla films recently. Wink, that doesn't do that. Like the human drama is playing out with Godzilla. Mm-hmm. This, it's a lot of Godzilla, human, Godzilla, human, and it's not interesting.
Right.
It doesn't all come together the way, like, if it was more, I don't know, smartly written or creatively done. It's a lot of just cutting away from Godzilla, and Godzilla's like not, he should be the focus at that point. Like,
yeah,
we need to resolve some stuff, I think, and then have our fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let the fight just happen and breathe and be its own thing.
Yeah.
Quit cutting away from it at
this
point.
Yeah, exactly. But it is the coolest part of the movie. Godzilla takes Miss Muto, he bites her neck, but then he pulls her around, opens up her mouth, atomic breath, straight down the gullet
till
her freaking head comes off.
Awesome.
And it is very awesome. I cannot take it away. The times Godzilla is actually fighting in this film, pretty damn good.
Pretty damn good.
Too bad there's not enough of
That's
it.
That's right.
Too bad there's not enough of it. Ford is rescued by helicopter, and the nuke detonates safely at sea, and we see Godzilla laying dead in the middle of the city. Right, Todd?
Not so much. Godzilla can't die in a movie.
Yeah, we see, you know, on the Channel 3 news, they've got in there on their bottom, King of the Monsters - Savior of Our City ? No, not really. Technically, yes, but not really in the spirit of it. No.
No.
What about Hawaii?
Yeah.
People died.
Tell that to the people of Hawaii.
He probably squashed 12,000 more people that were still left in that city. He probably killed 6 guys stepping out back into the water when he was leaving at the end. Is he the savior? No.
Yeah.
King of the Monsters? Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Right? But savior? No. I don't see him as the savior.
No.
Balance? Okay. Savior? Yeah. No. No, I didn't. Technically, okay, Channel 3. Just calm down. Calm your tits, Channel 3.
You and your sensational storylines.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Fake news. Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, they're reunited with their son, Lil Vision, at the stadium, and everyone lives happily ever after, Todd.
Ting.
So before we go on to final thoughts and everything, I got some Godzilla goofs here for you, Todd.
All right.
During the battle between Godzilla and the two Mutos, many of the San Francisco skyscrapers, such as the Grand Hyatt Hotel, are destroyed multiple times, then reappear after their collapse.
How about that?
I felt it was only fair to include this since we shit on Godzilla 98 for doing the same thing.
Exactly.
When Godzilla swims under the bridge, he is able to swim under the boats. When he stands up in the water, it comes to about his knees. The level of the water in the second shot would have been too shallow for him to submerge completely.
Ah.
When Elle puts Sam on the bus at the hospital, her co-worker is in front of the seat and promises to take care of him. This is what I was mentioning before. Later, when the bus is stopped on the bridge because of the military operation, Sam is sitting near the window midway in the bus and in the opposite side of where Elle's co-worker had been seated. In the following frames, you can see there are no other adults in the bus other than the driver. That child was abandoned.
Again.
Factual error here. Captain Hampton informs Dr. Sarazawa that the nuclear warhead that they would be using had a yield of megatons, not kilotons, and that by comparison, the 1954 explosion to kill the Muto would be like a firecracker. However, as shown in the film's intro, the 1954 explosion was the Castle Bravo nuclear test. This thermonuclear explosion had a yield of some 15 megatons, still the largest ever detonated by the U.S. The modern nuclear device would be the small one by comparison.
America.
Factual errors. America. Another factual error here. The soldiers in the film armed the nuclear warhead by using the standard two-man simultaneous key turn method. You remember that?
Oh, man.
Unlike actually other arming mechanisms, the locks in the film are close enough that one man with both keys could easily turn them both. I got some Godzilla bits, too. You want some bits of Godzilla, too, Todd?
I have a little bits of Godzilla, yeah.
Godzilla is covered in keloid scars, raised thick patches of skin. The original Godzilla 1954 was heavily scarred to evoke the gruesome marks borne by the survivors of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings. The United States Marine Corps declined to participate after the experience on the 1998 TriStar film. The United States Navy cooperated with the 2014 production.
Okay.
Dr. Ishiro Serizawa was named after Ishiro Honda, director of Godzilla 1954, and Dr. Daisuke Serizawa, one of its main characters. So nice little throwback
to
there.
The original.
I mentioned before, the music in the background during the Halo jump is from a 2001 Space Odyssey. It's called Requiem. Godzilla was originally planned to be found preserved in a Siberian glacier. This was changed when the filmmakers saw that Man of Steel 2013 had a similar scene.
Yeah.
According to Bryan Cranston, Gareth Edwards is inspired by Jaws. The film does not immediately show the beast, but rather builds up to its appearance. While still delivering an eerie and terrifying off-screen presence, the Brody family is named after Jaws' protagonist.
Wow.
Now, this says it builds up and before it shows the appearance. Yes, technically true. Jaws is about a shark under the water.
Right.
That's part of the fear of the ocean is not being able to see.
What's in
Godzilla's
the water?
Walking fucking upright in cities, okay? It's not like Jaws.
Not at all like Jaws.
Gareth Edwards and the design group reviewed all the previous incarnations of Godzilla's design for inspiration of its final design. The way I tried to view it was, imagine Godzilla was a real creature, and someone from Toho saw him in the 1950s and ran back to the studio to make a movie about the creature and was trying his best to remember and draw it, and in our film you get to see him for real. It was important that this felt like a Toho Godzilla. In ways, I think it does, but in other ways, it don't.
Yeah, it's...
It's a mix. It's
a mix.
It's an Americanized version that's pretty good.
Yeah.
The Muto design was inspired by King Kong, 1983, Alien, 1979, Jurassic Park, 1993, and Starship Troopers from 97. So that's what we talked about a little bit, the Starship Trooper design, you get a little alien xenomorph there, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Despite being the title character, Godzilla appears in the film after nearly 1 hour, as you mentioned, and is only in the film for 11 minutes, so I was right.
God almighty.
According to Gareth Edwards, Godzilla's design is inspired by bears and Komodo dragons. In particular, his face is influenced by the heads of bears, dogs, and eagles. Edwards says the eagle has a lot of nobility. It made him feel very majestic and noble.
Ah.
And finally, Aaron Taylor Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen played husband and wife. A year later, they played brother and sister in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Hey, I'm just kidding.
All right, Todd, ready to go on to reviews?
Let's do it.
We rank films on a 1 to 10 scale, starting from 1. The ranks are torture, 2 awful, 3 bad, 4 subpar, 5 mediocre, 6 decent, 7 good, 8 great, 9 amazing, 10 masterpiece. Todd, give us any final thoughts you have and your review score for Godzilla 2014.
As we've mentioned before, the human element can a lot of times detract from what we've really come to see, which is Godzilla himself or the monster or monsters he's battling. In this film, the human element, in my opinion, human story in general, almost hijacks the entire film. Godzilla looks great here. I think we're on the right track, but unfortunately, I think we stall a lot more than we soar. I give Godzilla 2014 a 6, which on our scale is decent.
Gotcha. I know if you've been watching this and if you've stuck around to this point, maybe it sounds like I've been shitting on this movie a lot, and perhaps I have. I don't hate it. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it has some problems. Like Todd said, the human element of this film really lets it down. And that kind of exacerbates the problem of Godzilla not being in it enough when you don't have strong human characters to connect you to the story. But again, I don't think this is a bad film. I think it's a fairly decent film. I think there's diminishing returns for the rest of the MonsterVerse as we go through. Maybe we'll talk about some of those one day. For me, I was a little bit more generous. I give Godzilla 2014 7 flying Godzilla dropkicks out of 10, which ranks it as good. Todd, tell everyone how they can find us and stay up to date with us on social media.
We are at Tau Capes on YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Tau Capes Podcast on Facebook. You can also email us at taucapespod@gmail.com.
Also, if you're so obliged, leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice really helps the show. Popcorn Mumbles will return next week. We want to thank you so much for listening. Until next time, bye, guys.
See you, guys.